Good morning, everybody.
Sure. Yep.
It's good to see everybody this morning. Thank you for coming out in the rain. I appreciate that as well. No one is an accident. Do you believe that? No one is an accident. God knew you were going to be born. God's always known you were going to be born. And God has a mission for you. Ephesians 2:10 says that we're created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which he prepared in advance for us to do. He has a mission for us to live out, a mission for your family, a mission for you in your marriage, at work, in your community here, and even here at the church. It's a mission that's going to give purpose to your life. It will give focus to your life as this mission kind of pulls together your decision-making and those kinds of things. It gives focus, and it will give you a sense of fulfillment as you see that mission accomplished. It's a mission that will bring glory and honor to God and will allow you to feel the thrill of God's power at work in you. Does that sound good? The question is, how do we discover this mission? How do we discover it so we can actually grab it and live it? That's what we're going to be learning in our leadership cohort. Starts next week, once a month, but we are going to be learning how we can discover and live into this mission God has for us. It's going to be a very exciting, it's going to be a very exhilarating class. And when I say class, it's not going to be the kind of thing where I'm going to just stand there and lecture for an hour and a half and, you know, you just sit there and soak in all the gems of wisdom. No, it's going to be very interactive. It's going to be a great experience. It's going to be very hands-on, not just learning, but practicing the things that we are learning. And you're going to learn how to hear from God and develop a God-given vision for your family, for the work you do, for the life you live, and for the role God has created you for here in this church. We're going to be learning from one of the Bible's many great leaders, Nehemiah, and studying from Nehemiah, learning those things. We're going to be using a book called Visioneering. This is an older copy. The new copy is blue, so don't let that throw you. But Visioneering, which is about Nehemiah and creating a God-given vision, discovering a God-given vision. You do not need to buy the book, have the book for this class. If you have it, it will be helpful, but I'll be teaching from it. So that's that. And I'm excited about it. I think this is going to be something you're going to not just, you know, learn something interesting and forget about it, but this is going to be something that's going to stick with you and bless you for the rest of your lives. The things you're going to learn are going to be a blessing. So I hope as many of you as possible can come and be a part of that. It is once a month, 4 to 5:30 p.m. We do have a location. Peter just didn't know about it. We decided yesterday. But it's going to be at the Evolve Aikido Studio on Auto Center Drive, just kind of north there above the Auto Center. At 4 o'clock, come a few minutes early so that we can actually start on time, you know, because you usually say you show up at 4 and people drive in the parking lot at 4, you don't get started. It's a mess. Show up a few minutes early. That's all I'm saying. All right. Once a month, we won't be meeting on December. December, you know, has other things to do. And it'll go through the school year, and it'll be powerful. If you're interested in that and haven't signed up yet, on those connection cards, there's a spot on the back where you can write, yes, I'm interested in being part of that. That's just to help with our own planning, know how many tables and chairs to set out. So look forward to that. I wanted to give you a heads up on that. Anybody ever experience any highs and lows? I know, dumb question. We're going to talk about that this morning. If you pull out your out of your bulletin, your notes there, you can follow along with the notes. That'll be great. Here's some of my highs and lows. Monday, my teenager thinks I am the greatest person in the world. Tuesday, I am the worst person in the world, and they're asking why I hate them. High and low. I'm working on an exciting new project, and I set up an appointment with my boss to go in and share it all and kind of get it set up and get some momentum behind this exciting project. But when I meet with the boss, we don't talk about the project. Instead, I found out there's been budget cuts, and I'm one of them. And I'm being laid off. High, low. I had just returned home from a really, really exciting family mission trip to Ensenada, Mexico. Fantastic stuff happened. And the day I get home, I learn my father has cancer. Highs and lows. We've all experienced them, right? It's part of life. One moment we are at the top of the world, and the next moment we are at the bottom of the ocean. And sometimes, often, it's not like a gradual decline, right? It just happens, just like that. Overnight, in a second sometimes, we go from a high to a low. That's what we want to talk about. How do we deal with the highs and lows of life? Also want to talk about failure. Failure is a part of life as well, right? We've all had our failures. Maybe some of you here, maybe one of you here, I don't know. Maybe someone's had to repeat a class or a whole grade in school. Maybe the teacher told you that you were too stupid to learn anything. Maybe you were cut from your high school sports team. Maybe you failed in business. Maybe you failed to get promoted or picked for a position. Not once, but multiple times. We all fail. But we do not want failure to define us, do we? We do not want to be perceived and seen as failures. We do not want to see ourselves as failures. We do not want our lives to amount to nothing. And we've talked about why we feel that way, why we react to failure so strongly, why we don't want to be defined by failure. It's because we are created in the image of God. We are created unique and special with a special mission. We're created to live God-sized lives where God is filling us with His presence. Created to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. We're created to have significance, created to have a legacy. That's hardwired into us. Even when we don't know God, we still sense that in ourselves. And so failure really bothers us. And none of us wants to be seen as a failure. None of us wants to be defined that way. But the lows of life start to wear us down. Our failures start to take us down, beat us down. And we start to sink and we start to worry we're never going to bounce back. How do we deal with that? That's what we're going to talk about this morning. How to face the lows of life so we don't get stuck there. There are lows in life, but we do not want to get stuck there. How do we deal with failure so that rather than being destroyed by the failure, we'll be strengthened by the failure? Is it possible to be strengthened by failure? Is it possible to actually fail forward? I don't know what you think about that, but let me share those examples of failure I gave before. That person who had to repeat a class, a whole grade in school, that was Winston Churchill. He failed sixth grade. I think he did all right for himself. That person who was told he was too stupid to learn anything? Thomas Edison. Guess he proved that teacher wrong. Michael Jordan was cut from his high school junior varsity basketball team. Coach said it was the stupidest decision he ever made in his life. And Abraham Lincoln lost every election he ran for, 8 elections, until he ran for president. The only election he ever won. Also failed in business 2x. We can fail forward. And today we're going to learn lessons from someone who has gone from the highest high you can imagine to an incredible low in just like record time. And his name is Peter. No, not Peter Gattel. But Peter the Apostle. We've been studying Matthew chapter 14. 22 through 33. So you can turn there with me if you want, or I'm going to read it in just a moment. But from this passage, we have been learning a pattern for growth so that we can experience a God-sized life, step by step, how we can experience this God-sized life we're meant for. It says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him. Right before this moment, Jesus had fed the 5,000. Incredible miracle. First reaction, you go, I'm going to go and pray. So immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he dismissed them, he went up on the mountainside by himself to pray. And that, we've been talking about, is the foundation to everything, prayer. Prayer is our foundation of growth. Prayer is our foundation for connecting with God. Prayer is what opens our life up to God so that we can speak to God and God can speak to us. If we are not praying, we are not building our foundation. And when the storms come, we're going to get washed out. We need to pray. That's the foundation. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them. Actually, when evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. So, big storm. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." This is step one in our process of growth. In our fears, we hear Jesus say, "Take courage." In our fears, we recognize that it is Jesus. He is present. He is with us. We draw strength from that. "Of whom shall I be afraid when God is with me?" So step one, we hear Jesus say, "Take courage. Don't be afraid. It's me." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." And that was step two. Step two is to dare to ask, "Tell me to come." Step two is to say, "I am ready to follow. I am ready to obey. Jesus, I believe in you. I'm ready to follow. Tell me to come." "Come," Jesus said. And that's step three. We're listening and hearing Jesus say to us, "Come." Calling us to the mission he has for us, the purpose he has for us. So we take courage. We dare to say, "Tell me to come." And then we listen and we hear Jesus say, "Come." And then Peter got down out of the boat and it's solid. And he walks on the water and he comes toward Jesus. And that's step four. Step four is we risk taking a step of faith. We risk stepping out. All right, Jesus has said, "Come." It's going to stretch me. It's going to challenge me. It's kind of out of the box for me. It's not exactly in my comfort zone, but it's Jesus who's saying, "Come." I'm stepping out. That's where we got through last week. But when Peter saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Surely you are the Son of God." When Peter stepped out of the boat, he was taking an enormous risk, right? He'd grown up on the water, and all the time he spent on the water, never once did he stand on top of it. Never once did he see anybody else stand on top of it. In all of human history, no one has ever stood and walked on water. It was a clear impossibility. So when he stepped out of the boat, he was doing something really stupid. Except that it was Jesus saying, "Come." And he trusted that it was Jesus saying, "Come." The only guarantee Peter had was the fact that it was Jesus saying, "Come." No other guarantees whatsoever. When Jesus calls us to step out, oftentimes it doesn't come with a guarantee. "Yes, I'll come, Jesus, when you guarantee my salary. Yes, I'll come, Jesus, when you guarantee my success. Yes, I'll come, Jesus, when you guarantee people will follow. Yes, I'll come, Jesus, if. It usually doesn't come with a guarantee because it's about trust. Peter trusted. He took that step, and with one step, he left this small, cramped, boring, boat-sized life and stepped out into this incredible God-sized life, this unbelievable, impossible kind of life. With one step, he entered a God-sized life. And as long as he stayed focused on Jesus, he was good. As long as he stayed focused on Jesus, he was walking on the water. But we just read what happened. He lost his focus. and he went down like a rock. From the highest of high, walking on the water. Imagine if that's you. Can you top that? I dare you to top that. From the highest of high to all of a sudden drowning in the snap of a finger. All because he got distracted. Last week I shared with you three things that help us keep our focus on Jesus. The study of God's Word keeps us focused on Jesus. Prayer keeps us focused on Jesus. Practicing the presence of God keeps us focused on Jesus. Being aware of His presence throughout the day in whatever work we are doing. And participating in Christian community and having them encourage us and support us. That helps keep us focused. Today, I want to talk about the things that distract us. The things that break our focus, all right? And the first one is a cute child wearing a beanie in the back. At least for Peter, it was a distraction. But in the bulletin, the first distraction is temptation. Temptation. Temptation is that nebulous thing. Sometimes it's in our mind, sometimes it's out there. It's usually both. Some kind of a stimulus, a sensory stimulus that triggers something in our mind that tempts us to do something that goes against God's plans, goes against God's desires, goes against God's ways, goes against the way God created us to live. Something tempting that makes us think, that's better than what I read in the Bible. God must have made a mistake about that thing because this looks better. Somehow I must be interpreting my Bible wrong. This looks better. God really didn't mean that. God really didn't say that. That is exactly the way the temptation worked in the Garden of Eden with Eve. Did God really say? God certainly didn't mean that. Because God knows that when you eat of the apple, you're going to be just like God. It was all a lie, but it was tempting. Too tempting. Tempting distracts us. It takes our focus off of Jesus onto something other than God and other than Jesus. But here's something I want you to understand about temptation, is that Satan cannot force us to do anything. We often think he can. We often think that Satan is so all-powerful that he can force us to do anything. He cannot. All Satan can do is tempt us. To make something look better, to make something look enticing, to say, come over here, look over here, this is good. Now, he's really, really great at it. But he can't force us to do it. He can only tempt us to do it. I want you to remember that he cannot force us to do anything. But if we accept the temptation, we break the focus, then he's won. However, if we're strong, if we keep our focus, and he fails at that temptation, then he moves on to step two. Step two is, and you're going to hate this, busyness. Busyness. We wear busyness like a badge of honor. We're almost ashamed, almost embarrassed not to say, oh, I'm not busy, right? Because it's there, it makes us feel important. I'm busy, therefore I am important. It's all a lie. It's all a trick. Busyness keeps us from spending time with God. Busyness keeps us from paying attention to God. Busyness basically crowds God right out of our day, right out of our schedule. I am too busy for God? Really? Too often that's true. I want you to think of busy in a different way. Think of it as an acronym, B-U-S-Y, being under Satan's yoke. Busy is being under Satan's yoke. If he can keep us busy, he keeps us distracted. Keeps us from paying attention to God. Pay attention to your busyness. It's not all that good for you. Then there's a third thing the devil uses to distract us. Circumstances. Our circumstances. Things are not going well. We start to worry about our job. We start to worry about our health. It's not going well. We start to worry about our finances. We start to worry about some relationship that's not going well. Circumstances get us to worrying about something. And we start to worry and we start to doubt and we're distracted. I'll probably do this again and again because I love this illustration. Dale here is bigger than my hand, right? Much. Dale is much bigger than my hand. But if I put my hand right here, Dale is gone, completely blocked out. In this illustration, Dale's God. Congratulations. And this is my problems. When I'm focused and worried about my problems, God gets blocked out. What do we focus on? We need to keep our focus on God. Circumstances can distract us. So how do we avoid these things? How do we avoid temptation? How do we avoid circumstances? How do we avoid busyness? Well, we can't. Isn't that great news? It's a part of life. All those things are a part of life. We can't avoid them. What's important is that in the midst of them, in the midst of temptation, in the midst of circumstances, in the midst of our busyness, we stay focused on God. We learn that we respond to it by focusing ourselves on God instead of focusing ourselves on the busyness or on the temptation or on the circumstances. This is a learned skill. It doesn't come naturally. All these other things come naturally. All these other things are the default. Temptation is our default. Busyness is our default. Circumstances and worry, that's our default. Those things come naturally. So to stay focused on God, we need to be intentional. We need to make a commitment. We need to decide, I am going to focus on God despite these things. It is a learned skill, something that we get better at with practice. So as we do it, we get stronger. So take temptation, for instance. Every time we get a temptation, if we respond to that temptation not by going, well, that's interesting. That feels good. That sounds good. That instead of ruminating on the temptation, if we respond to the temptation with prayer, we put our focus right back on God. And the more we do it, the more we will be able to stand against and resist that temptation. The more we'll be able to leave it alone. And the more we do it, the more we practice, the less that temptation will be tempting. Because God is working in us. God is transforming us. So what tempted us before no longer tempts us. It takes time. It takes practice. It takes commitment to staying focused on God. But while we're developing that, while we're practicing that, while we're getting stronger at that, there are going to be times when we fail. There are going to be times when we do get tempted, times where we do get stupid busy, times in which we will start to really worry. You're possibly in the midst of one of those times right now. What will be important is how we respond even after we fail. Can we fail forward? So we have Peter here. And Peter is walking on the water, and then circumstances distract him. A very cold, hard hit of water. He gets hit by a wave of reality. And suddenly, so he's walking, but the storm hasn't stopped, right? It's not like it's calm. The storm hasn't stopped, but he's walking on the water until a wave slaps him in the face, and all of a sudden it's kind of like, what in the heck am I doing? I'm not able to do this. Who thinks, I can't walk on the water, and bam! He's down. Going down like the rock his name means. He is going down. Now what happens next to Peter? What happens next is crucial to him and crucial to every one of us if we want to live God's sized life. Because if Peter drowns in this minute, there's no way we're ever going to step out of the boat. If Peter drowns at this minute, there's no way we're ever going to risk living a God-sized life. It's too dangerous. Look what happened to Peter. It's too dangerous. So that's why this step is so important. This step we're about to learn is so important to learn, to get this. If we get this, we'll be able to take risks. We'll be able to live a God-sized life. If we don't get this, we will always stay stuck in our cramped, boring, small, boat-sized life. This is the step. Number five, when things go wrong, trust God's grace. When things go wrong, trust God's grace. Peter messes up big time. He is failing. Now, he is actually literally drowning. But he does something in that moment, something brilliant. If we catch this brilliance and practice this brilliance, it changes everything. In that moment, what does Peter do? Lord, save me! I added that last part. But he cries out, Lord, save me. And what does Jesus do? Jesus reaches down and he grabs Peter by the hair and he dunks him under the water and says, die, you scum disciple and failure. That's often what we think God is going to do. He's angry at us for messing up. He's going to bring the hammer down on our lives. We're afraid to call out to God because we're afraid of God. We're afraid of the punishment, so we try to run away and hide from God. It keeps us from getting close to God because we don't trust God's grace. And sometimes we don't yell out, Lord, save me, because we don't think we deserve it. I've messed up. I don't deserve grace. And sometimes we don't cry out, Lord, save me, because we don't even realize we're drowning. We're that deep in. But this is not what happened to Peter. Peter cried out, Lord, save me. And Jesus reaches down and he pulls him back up on the water. And together, walking on the water again, they go to the boat and climb in. I want you to realize how huge this is. Peter messes up big time, but he does not drown. If you get that, you're going to be in great shape. Peter messes up big time, but he does not drown. We can mess up, but it does not mean we are going to drown. Peter is not condemned. He's restored. Romans 8:1 really captures this. Really states it well. In Romans 8:1, Paul says, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. No condemnation. We live under constant condemnation. We put it on ourselves. We get condemnation sometimes from our family, our spouses, our bosses, our workplaces, our employees. Condemnation comes from all over. There is now no condemnation from God. Not when we put our faith in Jesus Christ. Instead, we get forgiveness. We get restored. Jesus reached down and pulls him back up. When we say, Lord, save me, we mess up, but our response is not to try to cover up. Our response is not to try to run and hide. Our response is not to say, pretend, oh, it wasn't that bad. No, we say, Lord, save me. We confess that sin, and Jesus picks us back up. Not only is he restored and able to walk on the water again, but he is challenged. It gets better. Not only is Peter restored, but Jesus also challenges him to move forward, to learn his lesson, and to grow. Jesus said to him, O you of little faith, why did you doubt? And I can imagine Peter at that moment, after experiencing all that, back in the boat, and Jesus says, why did you doubt? And he goes, I don't know. You know, I don't know. You were there. You were there. I was walking on the water. I don't know why I doubted. Jesus wants Peter to learn from that experience, to grow from that experience, to discover that when he has faith, he has no reason to doubt. And when he has doubts, he can turn back to God in faith and be restored and challenged and grow some more. Oh, you a little faith, why did you doubt? Let me ask you a question. In this story, who failed? Did Peter fail? Kinda. I mean, he was drowning. Who was the bigger failures? The disciples who never got out of the boat. Yes, Peter went down like a rock, but also Peter walked on the water. How many people can say that? He had an incredible experience of God. Did he slip up? Did he experience some failure? Yes, but it didn't change the fact that he had an incredible experience with God. Why? Because he said, "Tell me to come." And when Jesus said, "Come," he risked stepping out. That's why we need to trust grace, so that we will risk stepping out. The ones who failed are the ones who didn't take a risk. Do you think that moment when he walked on the water changed Peter's life? If that was you, would it not change your life? Would you ever forget that moment? Would you ever forget what God did with you and for you and in your life at that moment? No! You'll never forget that. You'll carry that, and it will influence you for the rest of your life. It influenced Peter for the rest of his life. He now knows that he is able to live a God-sized life, that it's real and it's possible. He took a giant leap of faith over all the others because he got out of the boat. That's why we've got to learn this lesson. We can count on God's grace, and when we can count on God's grace, we can let it rip. We can really go for it because we don't have to be afraid. Okay, I take a big risk. I'm risking failure, but we don't have to be afraid of that failure. Why? Because we can count on God's grace. Back when I was, young, college age, I used to like rock climbing, but the reality is I used to like the idea of being able to rock climb. Because I was not really good at it. I blame my size. Nothing to do with my ability. But one time I was rock climbing. When you rock climb, if you're doing it the right way and the safe way, you have a safety rope attached to you, and that safety rope, it's called a belay, and it wraps around a person who's holding it, and they keep it tight so that if you slip off the rock, they've got a hold of you. You're not going to go anywhere. If you slip out off the rock, you're going to fall a couple inches maybe, you know, just kind of poof, and then you get back and you keep on climbing. So I'm climbing up this rock, and I've got the safety rope on it, and this person's got a hold of me. And I reach this spot where the next handhold is just out of reach. And to get to the next handhold, I'm actually going to have to actually sort of leap for it and grab onto it. Now, understand, I'm up far enough that if I fall, I'm going to hurt myself. And so I'm looking at that handhold, and I'm thinking about falling, and I completely forget I have a safety rope around me. And I freeze, and I panic, and I don't take the leap. Now, afterwards, when I thought about it, I realized, I could have leaped a dozen times. What's the worst that would have happened? I would have hung there, got back on and try again. And if I failed, I would have hung there, got back on and tried again. I had a safety rope. I was completely safe. But in that moment, I panicked. I forgot all about it, and I had them lower me back down. I never made it up. God is our safety rope. God's grace is our safety rope. We can go for it. We can risk it. Because the worst that will happen is that we'll mess up and we'll get forgiven. Now, I want you to understand, God's grace is not permission to keep on sinning. Oh, the worst is going to happen, I'm going to sin and I'm going to get forgiven. It's not permission to sin. God's grace is permission to go for it. To live God's life. To experience more of His power. Because we are better off risking it and messing up once in a while than not risking it at all. Your failures do not change God's grace. God's grace changes your failures. Remember that. God's grace changes your failures. I'm looking out here at all of you. Great looking group. And what I see is 100% failure rate. Right? You, me, 100% failure rate. We've messed up with our spouses. We have messed up with our kids more than once. We've messed up at work. We've messed up at church more than once. That doesn't change God's grace. God's grace changes our failures. So my question for you is, what would you do for God if you knew you could not fail? What would you do for God if you knew you could not fail? If you knew that you had God's grace as a safety rope, what would you be willing to risk? Takes us to step six. Step six, you hear Jesus ask, "O you of little faith, why do you doubt?" What aren't you willing to risk? O you of little faith, why do you doubt? Now, I told you that this process of growth is like a cycle. So I want to show it to you now. I want you to see what's going on here. You start with that foundation of prayer. And then step one is in the midst of your doubts, in the midst of your fears, you say, Lord. No, you hear, I'm sorry, you hear Jesus say, take courage. Some of you are at this step. You have fear, you have doubts. You need to hear Jesus say, take courage. After you hear Jesus take courage, you take the second step. And the second step is to dare to ask, tell me to come, I'm ready. I believe in you, I want to be obedient, I'm going to follow. You take courage and you dare to ask, tell me to come. And then you go on the next step. The next step is you hear Jesus. You're listening and you hear Jesus say, come. And that's when you go, oh, I'm not so sure anymore. But you take step four, because it's Jesus who's saying, come, you risk stepping out in faith. Maybe you're at this step. You're hearing Jesus say, come, and you need to take this step of faith. Trunk or Treat is going to be this incredible opportunity to rub shoulders with hundreds of people in our community. Incredible opportunity for them to rub shoulders with Jesus through you, because Jesus is in you. An incredible opportunity for them to learn that there's a church here in this community that loves them and will make a difference in their lives. We need you. So sign up. Donate some candy. Decorate your car and get it out there. We about have about half the cars we need so far. We need people to help with games. We need all of you. Sign up and be part of it, because we don't want to get down to the last week and be panicking. So ease our minds, our circumstances, so we don't worry, and get signed up for that. But maybe you're at this step of risking stepping out in faith. Maybe you're feeling like, well, maybe I should try out the children's ministry, or maybe I should try out the youth ministry. Maybe I should join with some men and go out and feed the homeless. Maybe I should, you know, I'm feeling called this way. If Jesus is calling, risk, step out. And then, for some of you, you might be at that point right now where you're walking on the water. And everything is wonderful and great. If you're at that point, stay focused. But if you're at the point where you were walking at the water last week, but this week you are drowning, your step is to say, Lord, save me. Lord, save me. Trust God's grace. And then Jesus will pick you up, and he will ask you. That would be the next step. If you're starting to get picked back up, you're experiencing that forgiveness. Oh, you a little faith. Why did you doubt? And now I want you to see the cycle. Because as soon as he says, oh, you a little faith, why did you doubt? He turns around and says, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. We start all over again. In the midst of our doubts, we hear Jesus say, take courage, and we take that step. Only now we've stepped up a step, because we've gone through this experience. And we cycle through it again, and again, and again, and we keep growing. Keep experiencing more of God and God's life in us. Do you see how that cycle works? So let me ask you, where are you in this cycle? Because all of us are somewhere in this cycle. Some of you are at step one, where you are fearful and you need to hear, take courage. Some of you are at step two, where you're saying, I'm ready. God, tell me to come. Some of you are at step three. You've been listening and you're starting to hear Jesus say, come in some way, and it makes you a little nervous. Some of you are at step four, and you are ready, and you are starting to risk stepping out. You're at least sticking your toe in the water, trying something to see what God might do in that moment. Some of you are drowning right now, and you need to trust God's grace and cry out, Lord, save me. And some of you need to hear that challenge. Why did you doubt? And start over again. Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. Where are you in this story? We can trust God's grace. we can cry out, Lord, save me. If you're someone this morning who is drowning, maybe you're someone who's never even been in the boat. You're just out in the ocean. You haven't even ever given your life to Jesus Christ. You can cry out, Lord, save me. You can trust God's grace. And the moment you cry out, Jesus is going to be there. He's going to be right there, reaching down and pulling you up. Nothing will hold Jesus back from being with you. And he'll restore you and challenge you. So I want to take some time in prayer. I want you to think about where you are in this story, because when you know where you are in the story, you'll know what the next step is. That's what I want you to pray about. What is that next step you need to take? And for some of you here who maybe have never been in the boat, or maybe you've thought you've been in the boat and you realize, well, just going to the church doesn't mean you're in the boat. Giving your life, surrendering your life to Jesus puts you in the boat. You can trust his grace. So I'm going to say a prayer while everybody is praying for whatever step you need to take. If the step you need to take is to ask Jesus to be your Lord and Savior, to join his boat, I'm going to say a prayer. You just repeat it after me or something similar to it to commit your life to Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I realize that the step I need to take is to commit my life to you. I realize that I am lost in the sea of my failures, my sins, the ways I've disobeyed you. But that does not have to define my life. Because I believe that you died on the cross to forgive my sins. I believe you rose from the dead and can offer me new life. So right now, I commit all of my life for the rest of my life to following you. I ask you to come in, take over. And I thank you that at this very moment, you have guaranteed, you have promised that you've done just that. You've come in. My sins are forgiven. New life is mine through you. So I thank you for your salvation. Thank you for the price you paid that I can be saved. And I ask that you will give me the strength to begin to follow you. I ask that you will surround me with godly people who will help me learn about you. And if you're someone who just prayed this prayer, ask Jesus into your life for the very first time. Everybody, keep your heads bowed because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But if you prayed this prayer for the first time, if you just raise your hand, I'm not going to call you forward, not going to embarrass you. But I want to celebrate and pray for you. If you ask Christ into your life, please let me know. Just raise your hand, make eye contact. And God, I want to give you thanks for the way in which you work in our lives, the ways in which you come to us, and ways in which you call us. And each person here has found themselves in this story, realize that they're a part of it. And thinking about the next step, I ask that you answer their prayer. Help them to take that next step, to have courage, to call out in obedience, to be able to hear your voice calling to them, to have the courage to risk it, to remember to trust your grace, or to hear your challenge. You have nothing to doubt. Why do you doubt? May we be a church together who continue growing through this cycle, not doubting you, but risking to accomplish your purposes. Pray this in your name. Amen. quick reminders, in about 10 minutes we're going to have our quarterly business meeting. If you want to stay and hear what's going on in the church, have questions to ask, we'll start that in 10 minutes. Small groups start this week. Leadership cohort starts next Sunday. And instead of my saying go, I want you to imagine Jesus outside the door saying come. Come out into the world. Come out into life. Because this is just where we gather together to get empowered for everything we do the rest of the week. So hear Jesus say come and go and be a blessing this week. Thank you for being here.